This program is produced and provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
So I want you to imagine stepping into a massive warehouse in Shenzhen today.
Wow.
There are no assembly lines. There's no conveyor belts anywhere. Instead, what you see are hundreds of human workers wearing these high-end VR headsets and full motion capture suits.
It's standing there in the middle of an empty floor.
Right. They're just standing in place, reaching out and carefully folding these invisible shirts, or they're sorting imaginary objects on a shelf over and over again. And they aren't playing a game.
No, they're definitely not.
They are physically acting out a live data feed to teach a humanoid robot, which is located miles away, exactly how to replicate human dexterity.
It is honestly such a startling image.
Yep.
And it really just completely subverts how we traditionally think about artificial intelligence, right? Because, I mean, we've spent the last few years assuming AI development was just about feeding more and more text from the internet into a server.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that is why we are here today. Welcome to this deep dive into the source material. Our mission today is to explore a highly detailed intelligence briefing dated June 22, 2026, alongside a stack of recent financial and tech reports.
And the picture these documents paint is wild.
It really is. What this documentation reveals is that the era of simply asking, you know, who has the smartest chatbot, is completely over. The focus has violently shifted. We are looking at the rapid construction of a massive, unified, three-layer technological ecosystem in China.
Right, a system that stands from software all the way down to physical robots and then literally straight up into orbit.
Yeah. And just to establish our analytical lens up front, because these sources do heavily detail the ongoing geopolitical tech war between the U.S. and China, our objective today is strictly impartial. We are not here to debate policy or, you know, endorse any viewpoints.
We're just looking at the mechanics.
Exactly. We are simply unpacking the strategic engineering, the capital deployment, and the hard facts presented in these documents. We want to lay out the global chessboard so you, the listener, can evaluate the shifting landscape for yourself.
And honestly, looking at those mechanics is the only way to grasp the momentum here. If we start by examining the briefing's top layer, which covers software and capital, there is this distinct, almost aggressive departure from the traditional Silicon Valley playbook.
So let's talk about that top layer, because the numbers here are staggering.
Right.
The Wall Street Journal reported on June 16th that an AI company called DeepSeek just closed its first external funding round.
Uh-huh.
They raised $7.4 billion.
Wow.
Yeah, pushing their valuation well past the $500 billion mark. But the detail that really demands attention isn't even the overall number. It's that DeepSeek's founder, Liang Wenfeng, personally injected $3 billion of his own capital specifically to maintain management control.
Right. And that $3 billion personal injection is a massive signal about the timeline of this technology. Because historically, the AI race has functioned a lot like a sprint. You know,
like just trying to get the next product out the door.
Precisely. Companies would build a model, run it through standardized benchmark tests, and then rush to show investors like a 2 or 3% performance bump just to secure the next round of funding.
It was basically a race for PR and venture capital.
Yeah, exactly. But a founder tying up $3 billion in personal wealth, that fundamentally changes the company's operating physics. This is no longer a sprint. It is a war of raw financial endurance.
Because the costs are astronomical now.
Right. Training and running these models requires hoarding massive amounts of silicon, hiring highly specialized talent, and, you know, powering data centers that consume electricity on the scale of small cities. So when a founder secures absolute control like that, they insulate the engineering team from VCs who typically demand premature monetization.
Right. They don't have to sell some incomplete, buggy product just to satisfy quarterly earnings.
Exactly.
It's like a marathon runner suddenly being handed the keys to an armored tank. The game completely changes. They are securing the runway to build permanent strongholds.
That's a great way to put it.
And speaking of strongholds, this top layer isn't just about hoarding models behind closed doors. Business Insider ran a piece on June 21st about a model called GLM 5.2 developed by Z.AI.
Oh yeah, the open source one.
Right. And it's reportedly spreading like wildfire among US developers. The developers surveyed are calling it the first open model to actually hit daily use level.
And that term, daily use level, is the critical threshold here. Because for a long time, open source models were kind of just novelties.
Like a toy you mess around with.
Right. A developer might play with one, but when it came time to write complex production-level code, they relied on closed proprietary models.
Mm-hmm.
But what the surveys indicate is that GLM 5.2 is actually writing reliable, functioning code that developers trust in their daily workflow.
But wait, I want to push back on this a little bit. If a highly capable open source model is just circulating freely on platforms like GitHub, being downloaded locally by thousands of developers, do traditional tech sanctions even matter anymore? Or are governments just fighting a modern war with outdated weapons?
Well, the briefing actually highlights this exact vulnerability. Traditional tech sanctions are designed to block commerce at centralized choke points. So think of a commercial AI API as a digital toll booth.
Okay.
If a foreign company is selling access to their AI through that toll booth, a government can easily sanction the company, block the IP addresses, and shut the toll booth down.
So it's a targeted blockade, very physical almost?
Yes. But an open source model distributed via decentralized developer communities, that operates entirely differently. There is no toll booth. It is essentially a viral piece of mathematics.
Because it's just code.
Exactly. Once the weights in the code are published, anyone can download it and run it locally on their own hardware. The genie is out of the bottle. And this shift forces a realization that traditional export blocks are highly effective against physical semiconductors, but they're almost entirely ineffective against decentralized code.
Sanctions lose their bite when the technology propagates like a language rather than a commodity.
Perfectly said.
So that establishes the top layer. These immense insulated war chests funding viral models that just bypass borders. But a brilliant software brain sitting on a server is, well, it's completely blind to the physical world.
Right. It doesn't know how to exist in reality.
Yeah. If you've invested $500 billion into an AI, you need it to solve real-world problems, which forces a descent from the cloud down to the ground layer. And that brings us right back to that wild image of the VR workers in Shenzhen.
Ah, right. The facility run by IO AI Tech. Wired documented this on June 17th, and it represents this entirely new frontier of labor. They're calling them data factories.
I really have to challenge the practicality of this for a second. We constantly about how advanced these massive AI models are. So why does the absolute bleeding edge of robotics currently rely on human beings playing VR puppeteer just to teach a machine how to fold a shirt? I mean, it sounds incredibly rudimentary.
It does sound rudimentary.
Yeah.
Until you look at the underlying physics of robotic movement. See, the hardware bottleneck has largely been solved.
Really?
Yeah. Building a bipedal robot that can walk across a room and balance itself, that's a solved engineering problem now.
Mm-hmm.
The new bottleneck is entirely about kinematic data.
Meaning, like, the data of physical movement.
Yes. An AI can read every text ever written about folding a shirt on the internet, but text doesn't explain haptic feedback. It doesn't explain the exact micro-adjustments your fingers make when a piece of cotton slips, or, you know, how much torque to apply to a delicate object without crushing it. The only way an AI can learn how to navigate three-dimensional physics is to absorb millions of hours of high-fidelity data of a human doing it perfectly, recorded through the exact sensors the robot will eventually use.
So the workers in Shenzhen aren't just remote controlling machines for the sake of it. They are literally acting as the nervous system, generating the muscle memory data that the AI will eventually internalize.
Right. They are building a massive behavioral pipeline.
And according to a June 18th report from Xinhua, they have zero intention of keeping these robots confined to factory floors. Eight different ministries have jointly issued an AI plus consumption policy.
This is a huge pivot.
It is. They aren't just targeting B2B factory robots anymore. They are aggressively pushing humanoid, companion, and elder care robots directly into consumer homes.
Which is a brilliant, albeit aggressive, data strategy. Think about it. A factory is a highly structured, predictable environment. If you want a robotic model to achieve generalized intelligence, meaning it can handle unexpected variables, you need it to navigate chaos.
And there is nothing more chaotic than a human living room.
Exactly. By subsidizing the push of these robots into private homes, they are essentially crowdsourcing the collection of infinite edge cases. You know, a dog running across the floor, a spilled cup of coffee, a child leaving a toy on the stairs.
But wait, introducing anthropomorphic robots, machines designed to look and act like companions or caretakers into private homes, that opens up a massive psychological vulnerability. You aren't just putting a smart toaster in the kitchen.
Oh, not at all.
You're introducing a highly capable entity that interacts conversationally with people.
Which is precisely why the CACs, the Cyberspace Administration of China, isn't waiting for the market to mature before regulating it. The briefing outlines strict new safety rules taking effect on July 15, 2026, and these regulations specifically govern anthropomorphic interactions.
Yeah, the documentation points out that they are strictly regulating emotional dependency, especially concerning minors and the elderly, alongside mandatory emergency contact protocols.
Because they recognize the inherent danger.
Right, the danger of a vulnerable person forming a deep emotional attachment to a synthetic companion. So they are proactively building the safety guardrails at the exact same time they're incentivizing the mass rollout of the hardware.
It's a dual-pronged approach. Maximize the deployment to harvest the physical data required for the AI to learn, but strictly regulate the psychological interface to maintain social stability.
Okay, so we have viral multi-billion dollar models at the top and millions of data-hungry robots gathering physical telemetry at the bottom. But here is the looming logistical collision.
The power grid.
Yes. If you have millions of robots simultaneously streaming 4K video, haptic feedback, and spatial data back to centralized data centers to be crunched by massive AI models, the terrestrial power grid is going to absolutely collapse under the strain.
The energy mathematics simply do not work on Earth anymore. Training and running these models requires intense electrical power, but even more challenging is the thermal management.
The cooling.
Right. The water and energy required to cool terrestrial data centers severely limits where they can even be built.
Which leads us perfectly to the middle layer, the infrastructure connecting the brain to the body. And according to Tom's Hardware on June 20th, the solution to this terrestrial bottleneck is to simply leave the planet.
It sounds crazy, but yes.
Beijing has officially approved the Space Computing Industry Innovation Center. They are driving research into heat-resistant chips, low-power large models, and deploying satellite-based compute power to build a ground-to-space network. I mean, moving data centers into orbit, that sounds like science fiction. Is this actually solving a practical physics problem right now, or is it just an expensive flex to intimidate competitors?
No, it actually solves two critical thermodynamic problems simultaneously. First, orbit provides access to constant, unobstructed solar energy. You bypass the terrestrial power grid entirely.
Wow.
Second, the ambient temperature of space provides a completely different paradigm for cooling. You don't need millions of gallons of fresh water to keep the silicon from melting down. This space initiative is a key pillar of a broader 2 trillion RMB national AI compute network plan.
And a fascinating detail in that 2 trillion RMB plan is the explicit mandate to use 80% domestic chips. They aren't just building new infrastructure, they are deliberately engineering out reliance on foreign hardware.
Yes, they are constructing an insulated ecosystem. And while they look to space for heavy computation, they are radically transforming the ground-level infrastructure as well. The telecom sector is completely changing its identity.
Right. The briefing points to MWC Shanghai 2026, the Mobile World Congress, starting in just 2 days. But the promotional materials from Huawei, ZTE, and the major telecom operators make it clear this isn't a traditional phone and cellular event anymore.
Not at all.
They are pitching a mobile AI supply chain.
Because traditional cellular networks are designed to be dumb pipes. They take a packet of data from your phone, send it to a centralized cloud server hundreds of miles away, and wait for the server to send the answer back.
Which takes time.
Right. And when you're dealing with a humanoid robot trying to navigate a physical environment, that round-trip delay, that latency, is catastrophic.
Because if the robot has to wait for a server in another city to tell it how to balance, it has already fallen over.
Exactly. So this requires a shift to what they call edge inference. They are upgrading local cell towers and regional routers to actually do the heavy AI processing locally, right at the edge of the network, just fractions of a mile away from the robot.
That perfectly explains the humanoid robot penalty kick challenge happening at MWC. On paper, having a robot kick a soccer ball just sounds like a fun PR stunt.
Oh, it's way more than a stunt.
Right. Looking at the mechanics of edge inference, it is actually a brutal stress test. To track a moving ball visually, calculate the trajectory, balance the machine's entire weight on one leg, and execute a physical kick, you cannot tolerate any latency.
The penalty kick proves the system integration. It demonstrates that the telecom infrastructure can seamlessly act as a near-zero latency nervous system. The telecom operators are no longer just providing internet access. They are turning communication networks into shared bases for robot control.
It's like they realize the Earth itself is just too small of a battery for AI, so they're plugging into orbit and rewiring the cell towers. So let's step back and look at the sheer mass of this ecosystem. You have unassailable capital fueling viral code at the top. You have a space-based and edge computing nervous system in the middle, and an army of teleoperated robots mapping the physical world at the bottom.
It's massive.
And building a unified machine of this magnitude sends immediate shockwaves across the global tech landscape, which brings the reality of U.S. sanctions into sharp focus.
Right. The briefing cites another Tom's Hardware report, noting that the U.S. government was heavily considering adding DeepSeek alongside the memory chipmaker CXMT to the entity list,
which would effectively sever their access to critical U.S. technology and supply chains. But the decision was paused.
It was paused, yes, mainly to avoid immediate diplomatic escalation. However, it proves these companies are very much on the radar. But the intelligence briefing includes some fascinating commentary from Kim Jin, a prominent lawyer and tech analyst. And he offers a very sobering perspective on the efficacy of these sanctions moving forward.
Yeah, looking at Kim's notes, he seems to be suggesting that traditional sanctions might actually be accelerating the drive for self-reliance rather than stopping it. Is that a fair reading of his analysis?
It's entirely accurate. Kim argues that because the three layers we've discussed are now fusing so tightly, the gravity of the Chinese tech ecosystem is becoming too massive to be derailed by external component blocks.
Interesting.
A sanction might deny them a specific high-end chip today, which slows their speed of development by a few months. But it can no longer change the overall trajectory or direction of the ecosystem.
And Kim issues a direct, almost chilling warning to South Korea regarding this. South Korea's economy relies heavily on exporting high-end technology, particularly memory chips. And right now, Korean chipmakers are experiencing a massive surge in exports because this colossal compute network needs infinite memory to get off the ground.
But Kim explicitly warns those companies not to view that revenue as long-term profit. He calls it a tuition fee.
That phrase really stood out. I mean, the innovator's dilemma here is wild. If you're a Korean chip maker, it must be incredibly difficult to turn down massive, immediate revenue today, even if you know you're essentially handing bricks to the company building a wall against you tomorrow.
That's exactly it. That short-term revenue is intoxicating, but it's funding a closed system. Remember the mandate for the National Compute Network, 80% domestic chips. Once that internal supply chain is fully functional, the massive revenue stream flowing to South Korea simply evaporates.
So what's their play? Well, Kim's thesis is that to survive this shift, global tech firms have to integrate themselves into the new data paradigms. They need a stake in the edge AI compute services or the robot telemetry pipelines. If they only sell memory hardware, they'll be engineered entirely out of the loop.
Wow. So, to summarize everything we've unpacked for you today, the scale of this June 2026 intelligence briefing fundamentally redefines the AI race. We are looking at a hyper-integrated three-layer reality.
Top to bottom.
Right. At the top, AI models fueled by billions in personal capital are moving past basic benchmarks, securing long-term financial endurance, and spreading virally through open-source channels.
Yep.
On the ground, hardware is learning the physics of the real world through human VR teleoperation, deliberately targeting the chaotic environments of consumer homes, and bridging it all together, a telecom infrastructure that's moving computation to the local edge and looking to the freezing vacuum of orbit to bypass the physical limits of the Earth's power grid. It is a phenomenal feat of coordinated engineering. But beneath all these technical achievements, there's a profound philosophical pivot that I think we are all going to have to grapple with.
What's that?
Well, for the past decade, artificial intelligence has been trained almost entirely by scraping the digital world. It read our blogs, our articles, our Wikipedia pages. It learned how we write and how we think.
Right. It scraped the internet.
Exactly. But with this aggressive shift toward teleoperated humanoids and consumer-facing home robots, AI is no longer just scraping the internet. It is actively scraping our physical reality.
Oh, wow.
Right. So what happens to our fundamental expectation of privacy and our sense of human uniqueness when these systems don't just know what we post online, but perfectly understand the exact, intimate physics of how we move, how we fold our clothes, and how we navigate the private spaces of our own living rooms?
That is a very heavy thought to carry with you, especially the next time you look at that neat little AI check box on your screen. The intelligence has stepped out of the browser, and it is firmly establishing its grip on the physical world. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the source material. Keep questioning the rapid changes in the world around you, and we will see you next time.
This program is produced and provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.